Let's get things underway, as we do every Tuesday afternoon at this time, by saying hello to our friend Colin Fleming. Colin, good afternoon.
Hey, how are you, Rich?
I'm doing great. And excited to talk about an interesting guy, Maine native, born in Lewiston, who began and ended his life in Maine, but in between had his share of successes, failures, and adventures, to say the least.
Hometown boy, definitely for you, who ranged pretty far, both geographically and artistically, certainly. Emotionally, spiritually, he's a man who went through a lot of different things. He, as you said, was born in Maine and had a rough go of it right from the start, really. Mother died when he was fairly young. Father remarried. He took the last name of his new mother as his first name. Family goes to Ohio, leaving him at 14 years old in Maine to work in a shoe factory, which must have been trying. Think about that. Mm. We complain about now. Can you imagine what you would do with that on social media? Get really upset. And it sort of instigated this notion of depression in Hartley. Life was not going to be very easy for him in some ways, whereas in others, in terms of his development as an artist, proficiency was going to be the norm. So right from the start, that note was kind of struck.
Yeah, and had some inspirations along the way as well, and inspired, I'm sure, by painters, but also inspired by authors, writers, people like Thoreau and Walt Whitman.
Yes, he loved the Transcendentalists, Thoreau, Emerson. That's just clotted throughout his work. And in Ohio, he meets Sherwood Anderson, who wrote Winesburg, Ohio. And you wouldn't think that this kind of, like, middle American author that F. Scott Fitzgerald was going to look up to so much, and this eventual proto-modernist painter would hit it off. But that's exactly what happened. And Anderson even said to Hartley, you should try your hand at prose. And I think it's interesting because when we look at Hartley's canvases, they're very writerly. They'll be representational of an autumn scene, for instance, lots of those, which is why he's good for our purposes right now. But he has a way with color that it's a technique for irradiating almost, bringing something out that's deeper than just mere pigment. Here is this copse of trees we're looking at. It's like a story within a still space, very writerly, right from the start.
And also a guy who seemingly met everybody, was in Europe and was part of that scene for a while, and also got a tremendous amount of help and encouragement from Alfred Stieglitz.
Yes, and he goes to Europe and he hangs out with Gertrude Stein's crowd. And again, this is a weird juxtaposition in some ways, because we have this adherent of regionalism. And you have to remember, if you were a painter in America, at the time especially, you always would have felt a little bit behind, or a lot behind even, the Europeans. We hadn't been here that long. We hadn't been doing as much with the visual arts for nearly that span of time. And so there's this element of, like, the folk sort of craft movement in Hartley's paintings. Yet he has this virtuosic touch. You see it to a degree with Child Hassam, who also painted in Maine. But he was more of an impressionist who just happened to work in America. Hartley had these rugged American tones. He had this European cosmopolitan aspect. It was really a blend with him throughout his career. And I think a lot of that is that European element. Yet he was always most at home in New England, both in Maine and in later Gloucester, Massachusetts.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown about Maine artist Marsden Hartley, who I think it was, in the late 30s, moved back to Maine and said he just wanted to be essentially the Maine artist.
Right. He wanted to be the de facto guy you thought of for Maine painting. And I think to a degree, he was one of the contenders for that. You have Winslow Homer. So two majors sort of like throwing hands with each other for that title. But I think of him as more New England endemic than Maine specific. For instance, between 1920 and 1936, Hartley goes multiple times to Dogtown in Gloucester. And he suffered with depression throughout his life. It was certainly a difficult time to be gay, which is what Hartley was. And he goes to this, I like how these two stories sort of knit up. He goes to this abandoned settlement on the north shore of Boston that Dogtown was founded in the late 1600s, and it was this prosperous settlement. But what ends up happening is the men start dying off at sea. There's the Revolutionary War. More men die in that. The land wasn't very farmable. And the females who were left, comprising the bulk of the population, they move away from Dogtown. They abandon it. And they abandon many of their dogs, who became feral, very hound of the Baskervilles. Eventually, this town is covered by forest. And it is to this covered-up settlement that Hartley comes. And at first, he's scared of it, and it deepens his depression. But he spends more time there, and he starts depicting these giant boulders. He called it America's Stonehenge, crossed with Easter Island. And he does a series of canvases that are to American painting with something like Monet's Houses of Parliament canvases are to Impressionism. Really, just a striking series of this man who found peace in this place where I hike it, and of course it's allegedly haunted, there were witches, there are places that my photographs won't even come out, but it's very calming, and you can see what Hartley saw in it, both in terms of, aha, I'll depict this on a canvas, and what it taught him about himself in going there.
And along with his work in the world of art, he also dabbled in writing as well, writing both poems and short stories.
He did, and he left a wonderful sort of incomplete journal. And you mentioned Thoreau before. It has elements of Thoreau, really. And it also sort of suggests to me, a lot of people don't know that Rimbaud wrote a journal at the end of his life when he stopped writing poems. It became his outlet. And it's a little bit like a cross between Rimbaud's journals and Thoreau's journals. We always think of Thoreau as like just Walden. And it's very confessional. And if you read these piecemeal bits now, you can see how the way he thought of language would inform the way he would sort of have a pointillism element to his painting and blur that into more elongated strokes. He thought so visually, and it's just this wonderful record of someone who painted the way he did because he did so many other things at the same time.
He was also, I was reading, was influenced early on by Germans and German Expressionism, but all of that changed a little bit during the course of the war years as he backed away from that a little bit.
Sure, a lot. And we think about German Expressionism now, like what comes to mind? Maybe it's films like Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and Nosferatu, where we have those very hard lines, those strange angles. But if you look at, like, a painting, Autumn Sonata, of anything he does where it's a lot of just foliage busting through the canvas, like it's almost three-dimensional, that it's kind of along those same lines, I think, that it's a way for him to, again, blend multiple genres, even multiple topographies, which you don't see a lot in the American painting at that time. So it's like he took German Expressionism and he took those urban scapes and he tucked them away into the New England forest.
And you mentioned Winslow Homer, and I think here in Maine, people embrace Hartley's work with that of Homer, and then our shared look at the Wyeth family and our claim on them that we have to share with Pennsylvania, of course. But how about outside of Maine? How is Hartley's work viewed in the rest of the country?
I think outside of Maine, he's seen as someone who was very progressive. My hunch is he's looked at as more of a local lad made painterly good in terms of Maine. But Winslow Homer, for instance, it's very naturalistic, his painting. It's rustic often. And even when Hartley is depicting nature, he never feels like he's ensconced in nature. And I think that's made him worldly, 20th century, modernistically friendly in a way that someone like Homer isn't. We associate Homer, for instance, with a time period. And I don't really do that with Marsden Hartley. He's like someone who's, again, it's like Joyce. It's like Ezra Pound. It's like Gertrude Stein. It's like those people he admired. He's a modernist, and he always feels of whatever age it is that you happen to be looking at him from.
Well, it's been fun. I really enjoyed going back and looking at some of his work that I haven't looked at in far too long. And I would urge anybody listening to check it out and go back and learn more. Reacquaint yourself with the work of Marsden Hartley. Fascinating stuff here. And next time, I can't wait for this. Next week, we talk about one of the greats in American music history, Thelonious Monk.
Yes, Thelonious Sphere Monk, who on the very day will be marking his 100th birthday, and someone who, although their time period didn't really, I wonder if Marsden Hartley would listen to Thelonious Monk, but I bet he'd dig him. Very elliptical way of writing Monk, and certainly someone who drew on a lot of seemingly divergent styles himself. So, should be a good one.
We're looking forward to it next Tuesday. Thanks as always, Colin. We'll see you then.
All right, thanks, Rich.
15 minutes after 5 o'clock downtown here in a Tuesday afternoon program. Colin Fleming, you see his work well everywhere. My goodness. He writes for everybody. New York Times and Slate and everywhere. And, of course, as heard, NPR, Weekend Edition. He's everywhere. And he's great, and we're so lucky to have him on the show, Sports Illustrated. Why do we love Colin Fleming? Well, among other reasons, because he sort of represents what we try to do on the show, and it's that broad interest. He can talk sports like nobody's business, but the arts, interested in a whole lot of things. And we love having him on every week on the program.